Joining me on the podcast today is a man who announced himself to the world with a race that will go down in history as one of the greats, 1500 meter world champion Josh Kerr. In a time when athletics is so vulnerable, it's in need of figures to stand out and shine a light. I believe Josh has all the qualities to achieve this. Josh's environment means everything to him and has been his greatest motivation to drive his success. 2023 was a hugely successful year for him. With his current form, 2024 has the potential to be something special. Josh, thanks for joining me. God, this is an exciting conversation to have.
Yeah, I'm very excited to be here. It's nice, bright and early. I've got some lights on to really brighten my face up, but we're going to have a good time.
So, bud, how are you doing? God, it's crazy. So you're talking to me right now all the way over from Florida.
Yeah, no, I'm good. Thank you. I finished my season on Sunday. So a couple of days ago in New York, I ran the New York Fifth Avenue Mile there. The next day, I just took a flight to Florida. My fiancée just finished medical school and started her residency in Florida. And she's off to work. I'm just going to be a bit of a bum for a couple of weeks, play some golf and maybe drink some beer. So that's my plan.
So, I mean, so you're from Scotland. I got to spend a couple of years in Scotland when I was younger. I went to school way up north near Elgin. So Scotland is a place very close to my heart. I absolutely love it. And I think the funniest thing about that country is even being English, you do find yourself, I don't know, if you live in Scotland for a period of time, you become so patriotic. It's almost like you become more Scottish than English.
Seriously, I don't know what it is. It's definitely a sense. Whenever I'm home as well, I was able to get home for like 5-6 days after Budapest, so that I could go and see family and do lots of things over there. And it's just like, oh, I just loved it. It's just, I'm there and just seeing people from like school and like, from growing up and things. And it's just, everyone's just, doing their thing, very passionate about everything they do. And every single word that comes out of my mouth or just the whole time, they're like, oh, you're so American now. You're so American. I can never let it go. I'm like, God damn it. So yeah, that's kind of frustrating, but we'll get back to it.
This year for you, I mean, from what I can tell, has just been unbelievable. I mean, especially in the past month alone. I just find there are moments in an athlete's career that maybe can define so many things. And for me, there's always like these absolute pieces of gold like that you can witness. And I think your most recent success in the 1500 meter world champs was just one of those moments. And when you and I were talking before this recording, it's one of those moments where the arms literally just stand up. I had one of those with David Weir, when he had when he won his Olympic gold and he absolutely destroyed that finish line. And I just think with you, I think you knew you had that in the locker, but it was a case of, I mean, to take on, is it Jacob? How do you pronounce his name? Jacob?
Yeah, like Jakob, Jacob, well, yeah. Yeah,
to take on someone who I guess probably was favored to win that race and to finish it in that fashion, was that a moment that you knew you had in the locker, or is that just something that came out of nowhere, just purely, I guess, from the atmosphere that you were experiencing?
I've been in the sport for a very long time, and there was just a sense of just calmness over me where I was just ready. I was ready to, throw everything at this race and kind of, I thought it was my time. I really did. And yes, it's difficult when you've got, an outright favorite that hasn't lost all year. Like he's been running some of the fastest times in history and it's just been unbeatable all year. And I raced him before in the year and, he was very, very difficult to beat. But I learned a lot from that. And with 200 to go, I made my move and really, really pushed him around the top end and just kind of went for it. But that's the thing is, like, when people's minds switched in the stadium to going like, oh, this is going to be kind of an easy win, to like, oh my goodness, this could be an upset. Like, yeah, the crowd was pretty insane. So yeah, it was one of those moments I'll never forget.
So, I mean, for somebody like him, I guess this persona that he has to put on, I guess the advantage you have going into a race like that maybe is not necessarily the lack of expectation, But I guess if the emphasis is so much on him, that gives you an opportunity to get the upper hand, which obviously you very much took in that final stretch.
Yeah, I think that's a big part of racing, is almost not being so, well, being arrogant enough where you're confident in yourself, but you're not overlooking competition. And I think that's something that maybe kind of crept up in what he was doing. And I think it's a really good point to bring up where, you know, you can be really confident, but you have to respect the competition, because there, you know, I look at myself and almost critique myself more than I critique everyone else, because I'm like, if people want to beat me, how would I do it? And that's just something that I don't think he would do. I think he was asked a question earlier in the year being like, what's it going to be like at the World Championships without having a pacemaker? Because, you know, in these 1500 meter races through the year, the Diamond Leagues and things like that, we have something called a pacemaker, which means they're in the race, but they don't finish. And, you know, it's much easier to run behind a pacemaker. And he said, oh, when the pacemaker drops out, I'm the pacemaker. And when I heard that interview, I thought, okay, there's something where he's almost thinks he's untouchable, where he's not going to do his homework. And I'm someone that likes to do my homework. And I think I have an opportunity and a 1% chance here of like an extra percent to really get after him. So yeah, he did muck up in a couple of ways, and I think that was one.
For me, I'm so intrigued when an individual like that comes out with these comments, whether for you yourself, you know, you're a Scottish man, I imagine that must evoke something. And I guess, would you take that personally, but in the best way?
Yeah, you know, I wasn't naive to the fact that in a paced race, all out, he's one of the best in the world. And I would have had a really tough time beating him. But I knew in the circumstances of it, being at a world championship, he's never won a world championship. So he's the Olympic gold medalist, but he's never won a world championships. The pressure was on him a lot. Everyone was obviously looking at him. Everyone's like, oh, it's going to be an easy win for him, whatever. But I know I've been in positions like that. I've been in a position where it's like, you know, I'm supposed to win and the pressure's on me. And I know that kind of just, you know, that pressure sometimes is quite a lot. And, you know, when I heard something like that, I was like, you know what? I don't think he's ready for what I'm going to throw at him. Like, I've been training so well. You know, my mindset is bulletproof right now. And all I needed was a couple of individual percentages where I feel like he's going to be lacking and I'm being a little bit lazy. And I'm just going to exploit them as much as possible. So when I heard that, I was very happy, because it was something I was thinking about throughout the year. I was like, because without this pacemaker, front running is so hard and he needs to make it fast, because I'm like leg speed, like my top end speed is faster than him. So I would have been angry about it and a bit annoyed about it if I didn't think I was going to use that to my advantage. And it was like, when I heard that, I was like, okay, this is really, really good, because he's not giving the respect to the competition that we deserve.
You know, you guys end up training sometimes in the same camps, right? How does that work out? Because obviously relationships are then built. Obviously when it comes to race day, you know, you separate yourself from that.
I think especially with the GB camps, like we are like, so I had a room with Neil Gurley, who's a guy that was also on the 1500, and I've known Neil for a very long time. He's Scottish as well. We, you know, grew up racing each other. I raced his brother actually quite a lot when I was from like 9 years old. But yeah, we roomed together, and I mean, this thing, you know, this room was, you know, not much bigger than, you know, there was two single beds and like one like couch, and that was it. And so it's actually pretty funny that they never normally room two people together. They're in the same event, but we got along very well, so it's fine. And it's the same kind of overall in the 1500. Like we all know each other very well. We all know each other's strengths. We all know each other's weaknesses, but it's not really something you can hide. You know, I knew that Neil wasn't feeling as good as he normally does. And I think he had a sense that I was feeling pretty good. But in these races, there's no, that, well, that was the thing, is like, you know, in these races, there's so many athletes. Like, you know, I think we start with 55, 60 athletes. And if you can't really focus on the individual. And, you know, both of us made the final. I don't think he had the performance he wanted, but he still made the final, which is very, very difficult to do. And it's just one of those things. And it's the same across the board. Like, you know, the year previous, I didn't have the final I wanted. And Jake Wyman obviously won the world championships. And so I know him very well as well. And it was like, I knew he was ready to go. And I think he also had a sense that it wasn't going to be my year. And so, yeah, it's a bit of a weird dynamic, but like gun to tape, we'll go a war. But after the finish line, it's just like a respect thing. Cause I know how hard they work. Like, you know, seeing athletes come into the 1500, especially, like, I was like, I know how hard I work. And so I know that you guys must work, you know, the same, if not harder, if not maybe a little bit less, but I just know the sacrifices they take. So I have nothing but respect for them. So it's a nice, it is a nice dynamic, but there is this constant undertone of like, oh, okay. Like, yeah, a little bit of alpha male stuff. But thing is, we're not in an aggressive sport. So it's slightly less testosterone kicking about. So that's always good.
God, the mind games I would play if I was rooming with someone. What would I do? I'd probably try and change their shampoo to Veet. That would throw them off slightly. No one really wants to go into a race with a bad lid.
I'm not allowed to. So I'm allergic to peanuts. And every day he has this peanut butter jar and it's sitting there. Every day it just sits there on the counter. And he sits out in the balcony having his peanut butter because he just... Yeah, I was like, Neil, you can't eat that in the room. He's like, okay. So he sat on the balcony every day and ate it and then came back in. It's pretty funny.
That's so funny. See, he's playing mind games with you. That's so subtle. I love that. His desire to eat peanut butter outweighs life or death for you, but he's still willing to commit. When you guys go into these races, there's not a huge amount of funding that goes into this sport. And it's only really when these big personalities come out where there is substantial money there, but they are literally like the 1%, right? And because I guess these games don't happen so often, and when you look at the news now about potentially the Commonwealth Games, you know, being discontinued, then you've got obviously the World Champs and the Olympics. Like, in terms of actually having these opportunities to really show your strengths, that there's kind of like, there's very few now. So obviously when those performances happen, you guys have got to succeed to the best of your ability, because I imagine the funding for future years ahead, you know, it's defined by that performance, right?
Especially this year for British Athletics, like, we took the smallest team, I think, in history to the World Championships. And a big thing of that, I think, was the money side. You know, we're going into the Olympic year next year. And, you know, there was a standard set by British Athletics being like, you need to run these times, which are, you know, the fastest times as standards we've ever had. And so I don't know. I don't remember how many people. I want to say it might have been 30, but we normally take kind of closer to 50, 60. So it was a big difference. But the big undertone with the meet was, we need to get medals. It's all about medals. So I think we had our joint highest medal count what we've ever had with the smallest team. And so there was this undertone of like, we need to get medals as a nation, and we need to get more funding. And so, yeah, I think we completed that. But yeah, there is a lot of pressure on, and it's you know what it is, like, our sport is, you know, the highest point of our sport is the Olympic Games. And, you know, I got the bronze at the Olympics in 2021, and do you know how much money I made from that? $0 from the Olympic Committee and $0 from British Athletics. You know, I have a great sponsor, Brooks, and, you know, I was able to get bonuses and I get paid through that. But when your highest part of your sport is something you don't really get paid for, it doesn't really bring a ton of opportunity to anyone but the 1% of, you know, the athletes that are meddling and winning these championships. But yeah, it's a super odd dynamic for the Olympics, because the World Championships, you know, it happens every 2 years. It's been back to back just because of COVID, but they pay money, but I mean, it's nothing crazy. But yeah, no, the Olympics is just it's just you there to compete and to raise your profile, and that's about it.
You know, I was on a panel discussion in Chamonix last year at UTMB. And the big discussion was about inclusivity of trail running or running in general, and like, how can we get more people involved into it? And, you know, I kind of went on the mic and I was like, you know, I think this discussion is great and I am 100% behind it and will do everything in my power to use the resources I have to make that happen. But the issue we have are incentives. Most people will get into something if it's, say, a career choice, based on the fact of what the reward might be, i.e. financial stability or providing for their family or taking themselves out of a certain environment. Well, when you look at yourself and you look at the success of what you've achieved, and you're telling me that you didn't even get a single penny from such a huge accomplishment from the Olympics, what sort of a message does that send to the younger generation in terms of the incentives? Because don't get me wrong, passion plays a massive part, but like, I don't doubt for one second, like, you, the number one reason for you doing this is pride and passion for that medal, right? You want to be the most successful person you can at that specific distance. But long term, unfortunately, we still have to pay the mortgage, right? And we still have to feed ourselves and our families. And does it come down to having bigger personalities in the sport, or at least putting more individuals in that or giving them that opportunity to showcase it? Because, you know, you know these individuals more than I do. There are so many personalities in this sport, but I just don't think we're giving them the platform to showcase that. I mean, when you look at the individuals like, you know, Usain Bolt, obviously, you know, he did hugely well. Yes, he was the fastest man on earth, but actually it was his presence within the stadium, the fact that he was able to play that part, that I think people became so invested in him. And, you know, I think there was that huge element of like, when he left the sport, of like, oh, what do we do now? And so for me, when I see what you've just achieved in New York and the world champs, we're looking for those individuals in this sport right now for Britain, the UK to get behind. And I just really hope that people start championing you more, because it's individuals like yourself that make us excited for these games once again.
Yeah, thank you so much for saying that. You know, I think you're right. I mean, Usain Bolt, you know, at his core was the fastest man in the world. And that is just one of the most exciting things to even just say. And so when you're in that presence, you're like, you know, this is unbelievable. But it really boils down to, the money side just boils down to, we're at these championships and we're wearing a gear that aren't our sponsors. And so, you know, when we're at the World Championships in the UK, we wear Nike, and when we're at the Olympic Games for Team GB, we're wearing Adidas. And so like our company, like Brooks, and for me, you know, who is my sponsor, other than wearing my spikes, like I can't really show them off. I'm unable to talk about them in interviews. I'm unable to post about them during these championships. And so it's a very small-minded way of doing things. And it's the same outside of these, where, you know, I can only have like two logos on my chest, and they have to be like clubs and like a running sponsor. And versus, you know, you're not allowed to have other sponsors on your singlet. You're not allowed to, you know, have other sponsors on your shorts or anything like that. And I think it is a very small-minded thing, where there are companies that have the majority of this pie, and they're unwilling to give up part of that pie to other sponsors and just take a little bit of pie away from them. But just everyone else makes way more money, and they're just not willing to do that. And so it is difficult, but what we could do is, as athletes, is continue to speak up and you know, try and, you know, get what we deserve. But like you said, the 1% in our sport make all the money. And so there's 99% of athletes in our sport that, you know, hardly are making minimum wage, and it's a shame. And we just need to extend that. We need to extend that arm and try and figure out how we can figure out more money.
Yeah, I guess that's the frustrating thing, right? It's this rationale from certain individuals where they expect the world from you, but offer you nothing. And then when you respond with, I just need something, and the attitude or the response you get back is, listen, if you don't want it enough, somebody else does. You know, how do you ever expect anyone to prosper from that? Because I think what we can agree on is the psychology that goes into this is astronomical. You know, I have so many friends in different spaces that on paper, they know that they could be the best at what they do, but the psychological side of things has been their undoing. And it's only when they've then been able to connect with a coach of sorts that it's then brought their performances back up again. When it's the individual that essentially you are fighting for to perform well, but they're not showing you that sincerity or that support, that becomes really difficult. Now, I know you can't say that, but I can. And, you know, I think that's so frustrating because there are so many individuals out there right now who are so unbelievably talented and just with that extra bit of support could go on to fulfill not only their dreams, but do unbelievable things for this country. You know, ultimately, in order for this sport to thrive, we need to find more individuals to inspire the younger generation. And if we're basically killing off any sort of talent we have right now, that's going to make it even more difficult for the future. So if you're saying we're only taking 30 athletes to the world champs now, it's not looking that positive that we're going to be taking any more than that in a year to 2 to 3 years, unless I guess there's substantial change. So
no, you're completely right. I think, you know, our job at the world championships here this year again was to get medals, yes. However, I don't believe because it was a smaller team and because we got the same amount of medals that that is the future. And I think that was very obvious when we were there. And, you know, I know the British players got a lot of backlash. And I do believe that there was certain parameters of why they had to make those decisions. And I don't believe that they spoke about it or were able to really talk about it. But I do believe and I have a positive mindset that it is for the right reasons. And I do think that when it comes to the Olympics next year, we will have a bigger team and there will be opportunity because it is too short-sighted to not continue to bring people like athletes on the team and get them experience. Like in 2017, I was brought to the London World Championships and, you know, I qualified for the team, but they didn't need to take me. And, you know, that experience was the reason I was able to then go on and make finals and then, you know, ultimately get that gold medal this year. And so it does make a difference. But, you know, our job now is, or my job specifically that I find is, I'm going to go to these championships. I'm going to try and win a medal as much as I can to continue to bring eyes on the sport. And then I'm going to bring those medals back to the UK like I did and connect those gaps of like, and connect the bridges of like, hey, club runners, hey, you know, young athletes, this was my journey. This was step by step the process that I took. And it's not as scary and difficult as you think and that far away as you actually believe. And this is how much fun you can have with it. And it's an amazing sport. Like, as you know, running is just like one of the purest sports there is. Mentally and physically, it's just unbelievable. And so it is, it, you know, it might not be the sexy sport like football or rugby where you can be on a team and be super famous and get paid all this crazy money. But what it is deep down, it's on you. It's the individual. And the highs are so high and the lows are so low that it's just, I mean, I've never competed in a sport like it. It's just the feelings that you get from the sport will just blow your mind.
What is your why behind this?
That's a great question. And I think it changes over the years. But, you know, I started when I was 8 years old. And I'm someone that likes to work on the mind a lot. And so, you know, when I was younger, I did have a lot of sacrifices to be in the position. I wanted to go to the US to go to university because I thought it looked like a fantastic opportunity. And then slowly but surely, it was like, you know, I've been gifted this unbelievable position of family and structure and support and coaching, and everyone has put like an insane amount of hours in. And it was almost like, what can I do to just commit to show that everyone else's commitment around me was worth it? Like, I want to give them back moments for them to live with them for the rest of their life. And, you know, for me, it's the freedom of being able to create a life for myself and my fiance and my family where, you know, like they're proud of those sacrifices that they've made along the years, and also just have the freedom to, you know, have the financial and also time freedom to spend time with them. And, you know, that's something that I haven't really been able to do over the last couple of years is spend time. You know, I live over in the US, while my family still lives in the UK. My fiance lives in a different state than me. And I know if I perform, I'm going to have more freedom. And so my big why was always being able to give back to the person that I was and the positions that I was growing up. I wanted to be that role model. And it was just, I've never had a feeling like going back to my school and with that gold medal and then legitimately screaming and clapping for like 3 minutes and the headmaster having to calm them down before I started speaking. And yeah, those moments will never leave me, because it was just like, I remember being in that position, sitting in there in the assembly hall, like waiting for Chris Hoy to come in and thinking, this is the coolest thing in the world. And look and be like, I want to sit on that chair one day. I want that to be me. And yeah, having that full circle is a pretty unbelievable moment.
This week's episode is sponsored by Runner. Runner is a personalized running coaching app helping runners of all abilities train for any goal. From a first 5K to a marathon, even an ultra marathon. When the time is right for you, your plan can be created within a minute and ready to go. With each plan, Runner provides all the help a runner requires, including strength and conditioning, and you can also reach out to the team at any time via the support tab inside the app. For a 2-week free trial on any personalized running plan, use the code PHOENIX. No matter your goal, Runner is there to help you achieve it.
I've seen documentaries before where you look at these athletes who have committed their life for a single moment, and I guess in your head, there's like this romantic outcome of how that's going to feel. When you finally succeeded in the Olympics and won that medal, and I guess equally with the world champs recently, was that feeling what you expected it to be?
The Olympics, there was definitely an anticlimax. But at the World Championships, I wouldn't say there was. So with the Olympics, I think the anticlimax came with no crowd. You know, like I said, my why was I wanted to create this moment for the people that had sacrificed for me to be in that position. And I crossed the finish line and I'm looking around and there's no one there. And, you know, I had to wait multiple weeks to be able to go and see family and friends and coaches and stuff like that. And it was almost like the moment had kind of gone. And you know, I'd already celebrated with, you know, Team GB, and, you know, I'd had a good time, but I was just on the phone constantly with everyone. And so that was almost an anticlimax, but it was still an amazing moment. But the World Championships, like, I had everyone in that stadium, and, you know, people that created my spikes, and, you know, the people that signed me on to Brooks, and, you know, coaching staff, and, you know, my fiance, my parents were there. Like, it was just one of those moments where I crossed the finish line, took about 30 steps, and was screaming with them. You know, that was, and it was one of those moments where, you know, you're on top of the world. There's nothing that you can, that I will say that I have practiced every single part of that day, except from after I crossed the finish line. And I was like, I had no idea what I was doing. It was ridiculous. I was acting a damn fool, but it's all right. It was okay. It was just pure emotion.
How, when you've got that medal, what do you do with it? I mean, if it was me, I just walk around my flat in boxes just with a bottle of beer, probably. I don't know. Like, probably go to the shop. I think that's the problem, is that everyone's too humbled these days. And I think if you've won that medal, just wear it. Like, just, you know, go to a bar and just start a conversation. Like, relish that moment.
I can't do it, man. I can't do it. My first thing was, I'm going to put an Apple AirTag in the box, because I don't want to lose. I lost my Olympic medal multiple times. And I was like, I'm not going through that emotion again. You know, I'm just going to, like, put an Apple AirTag in there and make sure it doesn't leave me. And yeah, the tough part about these medals when you're still in the sport, I really struggled at the Olympics where, you know, you've done something pretty much what you've always wanted to do. And then it's almost like, hey, just get back to work, because, you know, you got that mountain over there to climb again. And, you know, a couple of weeks later, you have to start the journey all over again. So it's nicer now where, you know, I've actually achieved the highest part of the year, and I did exactly what I wanted to do, versus before it was like I climbed this mountain for years and years and years, and I got nearly there, like third is pretty damn close. And then they were like, 2 weeks later, it was like, on you go, like, go again. And that was really quite difficult. But yeah, I did. I put on a good amount of weight, because I was just bevying every day. I was like, this is awesome. And then it was just like, get back to work, son.
With whatever you do, it's about balance, right? And I think we very much often listen to, like, the Mamba mentality, Kobe Bryant, right? Where you just, you know, these individuals, I'm sure they do live that life, but there is very much, people adopt and portray this persona, right, that they never switch off. It's 7 days a week. And that's great. And I think when you look at the accomplishments of some of these individuals, it is justified. But again, I think we need to remind ourselves that they are the 1%. And that's not to say you yourself can't be that 1%. But, you know, if you just go through life and you are just sacrifice, sacrifice, sacrifice the whole time, there has to be that element of like rejoice, right? Where you just can share these moments like you've touched on with the people around you that have enabled you to get to that point.
It's something that actually Steve Cram spoke to me about, me and Jake Wyman, when we were doing an interview the day after. He said, he pulled us aside, he said, boys, like, you're going to watch your races thousands of times. Like, it will get showed all the time, and you'll sit and watch it on YouTube, whatever. But don't ever forget what it felt like actually racing the race. Because he's like, you know, I think he won his medal in, you know, 1980s or whatever it was. And he's like, I forgot what it felt like. My only memory of it now is of me observing myself race as almost a fan. And so, you know, my big thing is holding on to the moment that I realized that 50 meters to go, I'd broken Jakob in terms of momentum. I had 50 meters to go. I looked up at the screen to make sure no one was coming. And I looked at the finish line. I was like, damn, that seems really far away. So just hold it together. And I will never, I'll never forget that image of like trying to not allow the emotion to kind of like all rush over you before the finish line even gets there. But I've just never had a feeling like that of like, I'm about to do everything that I've ever dreamed about doing in the past 16 years. And, you know, this sport, why I think it's so, like, why there's so much pressure, why at the Olympics, especially, that people love the storyline, is that I'm probably going to be in this sport for about 25 years. And my career is going to be defined on 3.5 minutes. And when you break that down, it's just insane. I just don't know how you can, you know, when I tell people that, they just freak out. And I'm like, don't freak out, but it's good.
When you actually look back on your career to this point, I understand that there are naturally going to be races that you were bitterly disappointed with, but do you ever look at it and just remind yourself of how special and unique it is for you to even be in that position to be at that race on that track on that particular day?
Yeah, and you know, there's 12 people in that final, and you know, you're looking left and right and they're all, you know, shitting bricks, really, is probably the only way that I can say it. And it is a moment of realization of how did we get here? You know, what have I done to deserve this? And it does come back to these moments. Like I have to simplify everything on race day. And, you know, for me, what I like to do is I'll write kind of a three-line or three-word mantra that I always come back to, because your mind is just racing. It's like, oh, my legs might not be feeling great. Oh no, like, you know, this stride didn't go as well as it normally does. This happened. And then I would spring it back to like, you know, you're ready, you know, like three different words. And I'll just repeat it over and over again. And my one at the World Championships was, it's my turn. And, you know, I've been in four major finals, and, you know, I've come away with one medal, but I haven't won it before, any of them before. And I'd had enough of being in those positions, but not winning. And it is the hardest thing to do in any sport, to go from being world class to world champion. And there's many athletes that you'll know that are world class athletes, unbelievable athletes, but have never made it quite to the top. And it's just been the hardest journey I've ever been on. And so everything was always the appreciation of the hard work that I put in, and the appreciation of time and effort, but also not taking that for granted and knowing that my time is valuable. And if I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it to the best of my ability. And when I'm handed an opportunity, when I'm given an inch, so like listening to interviews of Ingebrigtsen, I wanted to get an inch. I was like, just give me one inch and I'm going to take it and I'm going to go running with it. So when I heard some of the stuff he was saying in his interviews, I said, that's my inch, and I'm going to take it, and I'm going to exploit it, and I'm going to ruin your day. And so it was, yeah, this sport is just, the emotions that I've had recently, the highs don't even match the lows. Like in this sport, which is so crazy to say, but on a day-to-day basis, everyone will know, like, it's one of the hardest sports. It's almost the punishment of other sports. And so, but I think it's the easiest to understand because it's just, it's pure. It's, you know, you're just running as fast as you can from point A to point B.
Do you know what? The transition into golf for you when you retire is going to be so easy in that case.
I wish I was better, man. I genuinely wish. I'm trying so hard to be good.
I've got ADHD. I don't have the attention span to play golf. I forget why I'm even there or how many balls I've even lost for that matter. I start with like 20 and end up with like 2 and they're not even the right color. You said like you've come into this year and you've really taken note to how you feel. That confidence is up there right now and the performance is a testament to that. When you look at your performances, what percentage is the physical and then what percentage is the mental?
The mental part of the sport is something that is not worked on enough. It's just a fact. Like, we're the only sport that doesn't have to sit and watch film. We're the only sport that, like, it from an individual basis, people aren't learning as much about themselves, about the individual. Like, I'm more saying middle distance because I know that hurdles and, like, the field events do a lot of analysis and things. But, and then it comes to, people don't practice the day enough. I practice that, the World Championship final, the Olympic final day, 2 to 3 times a week. And that is going through the emotions, going through the food, going through the timing, going through the running. And so the time I get up, you know, the time I eat, the time I caffeinate, what I eat, all of this stuff is the same. You know, I'll sit in a call room for 25 minutes, which is just sitting on a chair before sessions. I'll, you know, sit in the car for the same amount of time that I know is going to be between the hotel and the track. And so everything that I do is not to be the best trainer as possible, not to be the best runner as possible. It's to be the best athlete that I can on the day of the final. And that's going through the mental emotions of it as well. But I don't think anyone in the world practices that as much as I do. And, you know, sitting there and pretending you're in a car room makes you look pretty silly down the track. But guess what? You know, I'm not going to look silly when it comes to actually doing it in Budapest. And so I always just have that like long-term view of like, I am a championship runner. And the way I do that is by practicing the championships, not practicing running.
It's so interesting you made a point there about understanding yourself and a person's mechanics. And I say this a lot when people come to me for advice when they've set themselves up for something. And having a coach is instrumental. But I think the issue is having a coach is one thing, but having a mentor is a whole different ball game. Because for me on paper, having a coach who is qualified is great. You know, sometimes there are a proven system to help you achieve that goal, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they are aware of you as a person and how to speak to you, how to get the best out of your performance. Because if they have their ideology, which could be quite a firm hand, but that doesn't correlate with your characteristics, there's naturally going to be that like disconnection. And so for me, it's having that awareness of how to connect with that person, I think really gets the most out of them. And it comes back to that psychological state again. And I think you're right. I still think in this day and age, there are sports that are exceptional when it comes to the psychological state. There are other sports that I think are so far behind and really do need that support. When you look at how many top-end athletes right now are speaking openly about their battles with anxiety or their mental health in general, very few of them seem to actually ever make the comeback to their, I guess, their original performances. You know, they seem to lose their way, which I think is such a shame. And I wonder if, is that a lack of trying or support in place to help them through that? When you look at someone like Emma Raducanu in tennis, what she did was so unbelievable at such a young age. And if you look at her performances and injuries since that performance, I'm looking at that now going, I just wonder if that psychological support is in place to help her at such a young age to regain that performance and confidence back that we know is there. You can't win a performance of that or win a tournament of that magnitude and then just lose the ability to play tennis. I think it's just a case of just giving her that reassurance once again, you know?
The best coaches in the world aren't so regimented. This is my schedule, get on my schedule. It's let's understand the athlete, what makes the athlete tick. But also, I think what my coaches know have done really well is they really know me. They know what make me tick, and they go, you know, my coach Danny Mackey, he doesn't coach me the same way he coaches, you know, Nia Akins, who was 6th of the world championships. or Isaiah Harris, you know, who ran in the World Championships as well, or, you know, Henry Winn, who wasn't at the World Championships, but, has been running really well this year. He knows the individual and he coaches the individual, and that's the way it should always be, because that's how you're going to get the best at knowing that they don't normally go out on a Friday night, or knowing that they do normally go out on a Friday night. And so on Saturday morning training, you're like, listen, this is what we're doing. Make sure you're getting a good warm up today, because, you know, maybe you didn't get the best sleep last night, or, you know, having a really rounded view on an athlete is important when it comes to coaching at any level. When it comes to competing at a high level in terms of, you know, of Emma, like the tennis player there, she almost overnight became what she always wanted to be. And it's like, that is so, so difficult. Like, she went from, she had the talent, obviously. She had the ability, she had the mental strength, and she did everything she wanted to do. And that is so difficult. There's almost never something harder than an athlete going and doing exactly what they wanted to do. And then, you know, you're in that position of like, oh, okay, I'm now the athlete I've always wanted to be. And someone's like, you know, a week later is like, so what are you going to do for me next? Because, you know, I finished the World Championships. First question I got, well, okay, I got a couple of questions beforehand, but one of the first questions was, are you excited for Paris 2024? You're going to go in round number one. How does that feel? Are you excited for next year? And it's like, I finished 10 minutes ago and I'm already getting asked of what I'm doing in 365 days. And that's the hard part, is knowing that one competition isn't going to define you as an athlete, because you've just got to keep moving. You've got to keep moving with it. But that, for her, that was such an amazing performance, and it was such a breakthrough performance. And I think it was just this storyline of it was just like, everyone was so behind it. And I do think she'll come back and she'll be able to be at that level, because like you said, it's not a fluke. And the amount of skill and how long those games are, like, these are not flukes. And so it's going to be exciting watching that journey of the comeback. And that's what it's building up to be.
It's nice for me to hear that you're asked those questions, because this is a conversation I have with a lot of people. With my last challenge, when I did the 76 marathons, I found myself like 27 marathons in, having people with the right intention saying to me, what's the next challenge? And I'm like, I'm 26 marathons in out of 76 here. Like, why are we thinking about what the next challenge is when this one's not even finished yet? Or when I finish the challenge, the first question that you will often get is, what's next? And it's like, is this what society's become like now, where we never really appreciate the present? We always look to the future, because this is what I was saying, is that really take the time to reflect on what it is that you've done. Even if the outcome isn't what you desired, there are still lessons to be learnt from it. And the only way you're going to improve that performance or get the most out of it the next time is making sure that you analyze every single part of that present performance that you just did. And so I think these conversations are so important, because for anybody that's listening to this, I think it's having these sorts of opinions can hopefully positively influence them, you know, for the future. And I think it's really interesting how you were touching on your environment. You know, I'm very similar in the sense that when you were talking about like the glitz and the glam that kind of came with your success, and how that ended up affecting your, I guess, the psychological state and the, you know, the performances, I'm the same, where I like to remove myself from luxury in its entirety. You know, even during the challenge, if we were ever offered to stay at hotels, you know, maybe on the odd occasion, depending on if my daughter was present, that we would do it, but I would much rather rough it out into the camper van, because I just didn't want to break that mold. I think it just highlights how unique certain athletes are. You know, when you look at like Jakob, who really wants to bring that awareness to him, or a Mayweather, for instance, in boxing, who really does surround himself with money and materialism, right? But it does not hinder his performances, and he still remains, you know, exceptional. Jakob as well is still exceptional, even though he puts that pressure on his shoulders. I just, you know, they are, I guess, the 1%, right? I don't know if I necessarily would want to find myself in that position, because I'll be truthful, I think that would genuinely, it would hinder me.
That's what I'm like that as well. Like, you know, for me, the 5-week build up from my last race or British Champs before the World Championships, my life was so regimented, and it was, you know, I had, I, I knew there was going to be stuff that I had to be better at, because, you know, we're not in a pure sport. There are people in there that cheat, and, you know, I'm going to do everything that I can to legally be the best guy out there. And so I was like, what's the thing that I could do better right now? What is it that I could do? Because I train my ass off. I sleep incredibly well. What can I do better? And the thing was nutrition. And so, you know, I sat there, and our team, the Brooks Beast, have a nutritionist, Dr. Kyle. And so I phoned him and I said, Kyle, do you think that you could write me a meal plan for the next 5 weeks? Like, every single thing that I'm going to put in my body, you think you're able to do that? And he was like, I think that's a great idea. Let's do it. And I reached out to a friend of mine, and I asked if she would be my chef for that 5 weeks. And she said, yeah, no, I'll definitely do that. You know, it wasn't quite as easy as that conversation, but, you know, it took a bit of time, but she was convinced to do it. And, you know, that regimented schedule of, this is what you're having today, this is what you're eating, and you're going to be the healthiest guy on that start line in terms of injuries, illness. Your body's going to be so resilient. And so that was my 1%, and that was the sacrifice. It was, you know, my schedule was getting up at 5, getting in the ice bath, having my breakfast, go and do my journaling, go and do, you know, do some reading, get out of the door, do your work, come back, nap, have some food, chill, go to bed. That was my life, and it sucked. It was really boring, but I loved every second of it, and I think you would be the same. There's almost this, like, in the struggle, you learn yourself, but you also just, it's all, everything that I ever want to do. That my body and mind have never felt so strong and resilient. And so going into the championships was always like, I'm here for a job, I've prepared every single way that I can, and I'm ready to go. And that was the mindset. And I think, I'm sure it was the same for you, because, you know, when you're in the zone and when you're just grinding, there's just nothing that is going to be able to rock you, regardless of what comes your way.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, guys, just to highlight the speed of Josh, I mean, as he mentioned, he won recently the New York Park or Fifth Avenue 1 miler with a time of 3:47. Am I right?
Yeah.
Which is the fastest time, I believe, since 1995. Is that correct?
Yeah.
So my last question to you, because I think this is something that is so important right now, because I think running, it's on that line where it could fall into a negative space where people, I'm starting to see, because of the influence of the people around them, are focusing so heavily on the time and the performance that they're starting to forget and neglect the enjoyment and the fulfillment of why they got into it. And like you said, the purity of the sport. And I think the reason why this question is so powerful and the answer coming from you is that you are right now in the world the fastest middle distance runner, 1500 meter world champion. What advice could you give an individual who has taken on running, no matter what the distance might be, how they can get the best out of that experience?
You know, running, again, is so pure, where you just need to take the time and just take a deep breath and realize that it is the best sport in the world, because it is, there's no skill involved. And so all it is taking a deep breath, internally figuring out what your goals are, and just knowing that anything is possible in this sport. It's all about what you put in. You will see the results if you just make sure that you're taking the sacrifices that it takes, you're getting the right sleep, you're getting the right nutrition. And, you know, I've never had the highs and lows that I've ever had in any other sport. And, you know, there's lots of other sports that might get more attention, but when anyone starts to really get into running and really get into, you know, track running and trail running, I don't believe they ever go back. And so, yes, as, you know, a middle distance 1500 meter athlete, you've got to make the right sacrifices when it comes to watching enough film and doing all this stuff, but any runners, I would say, cut from the same cloth. And, you know, mentally is going to be tough. You know, it's going to be a difficult sport to be in, but it's just all about knowing that the results come for those that honestly work hard and are able to do the sport and are in love with it. And, you know, I'm in love with this sport, and I don't think I'll ever stop running, because it's just, maybe I would do it without a watch on, because I don't think I'd be able to compare the times that I run now than I would run, you know, maybe in 10 or 15 years. But there's no, I would say there's no better sport. And yeah, I think it's all about you will receive what you deserve in the sport. And you just got to go out and get it.
Oh, mate, honestly, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I've absolutely loved this chat with you today. And the Olympics is coming up. We would absolutely love to get you back onto the podcast post-Olympics and see how you get on. You know, right now with your current form, I'm just so excited to see where you're going to place. I mean, in my mind, there's only one place and that's going to be the gold, baby.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Oh, you're a legend, bro. All the best.
If you enjoyed today's podcast, you fatted biscuit. All I ask of you in return is that you push that subscribe button and leave a review. Unless it's a bad one, you can keep that, your sausage. Your support, though, makes such a difference to this podcast and enables it to grow and connect with even more people around the world.